Looking at Mr. Williams and Mr. Sanders from ODF&W. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair?
Your sign-up sheet indicates that you're in opposition to the bill. Can you briefly summarize your opposition?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, in light of the hour, I will do so. I do have Steve Sanders, as you said here. He's our general counsel for the department, and he is also one of our negotiators on the Columbia River Fish Management Plan, and he will have a few comments to make regarding those negotiations and the impact of the bill. But I'll cover just 2 points here this evening that I want to make. In 1992, when the Fish and Wildlife Commission passed the wild fish management policy, it was viewed by the public and by all of us as scientists as a very important issue. The wild fish management policy has not been reviewed since that time, and one of the reasons that we are concerned about this bill is that through the governor's executive order, he's directed us as an agency and directed the commission to clearly review and, where necessary, revise the wild fish management policy. That review and revision will be starting very soon, possibly in June, and we expect to complete that policy review by July, hopefully, of the year 2000. That review will involve all parties. It will be working very closely with the tribes on that review, and we will look at all of the input from those individuals, as well as the science that we have learned since 1992 regarding the potential impact of hatchery fish and the interactions with wild fish. The second point I'd like to make is that one of the concerns I have with the bill is that we currently have a policy that the National Marine Fisheries Service has reviewed numerous times and has accepted as a no jeopardy situation. My concern would be if we were to vacate this policy or have no policy in place, that the National Marine Fisheries Service, I am betting, would come in behind us with some form of a genetics conservation policy. I can't describe for you today what that might be, but it is likely that it would be at least as restrictive as what we have under the wild fish management policy and potentially more restrictive if they chose to do so. Those are the two concerns that I'll voice here this evening. I'd like to have Steve Sanders comment with regard to the Columbia River Fish Management Plan and the impacts the bill may have there.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What mechanism do you use to coordinate currently the wild fish policy of the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the wild fish policy of the relatively adaptive management policies for wild fish from the Native Americans? Is there a coordination mechanism for these two co-managers?
Chair Farioli, we work continually on these issues with the tribes. A number of the projects and programs that they described to you this evening, we work right together on those and generally have staff from both of the organizations working on those issues. The discussion of wild fish management policy and how our policy and how the tribes' viewpoints that policy are discussed at length almost on all of these projects. If I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, though.
If there's these discussions, is there why is there a continuous apparent disconnect between the wild fish adaptive management policies and the hatchery management policies of the Native American tribes and the same policies that we see at the state level? And I guess as evidence of that, I'd point to the litigation and the testimony before the committee that we see a serious disconnect between the state agency and the Native American tribes.
Okay. Chair Farioli. Our view of the wild fish management policy is it's a policy designed to manage risk. What we've done is try to give ourselves some guidelines to manage the risk of doing the wrong thing, let's say, in the hatchery and having those impacts spread out to the wild fish that exist in any stream that may be out there today. The continued litigation that you refer to and that's been referred here to this evening, we have different in terms of really philosophies about what wild fish management is and the successes that may be involved there. We measure wild fish management policy basically on the basis of how many wild, I heard the term native used here this evening, but we'll call them wild fish returned to the stream from those hatchery spawners. In some cases, the measure of success used by the tribes is only that we have returning fish, and we are trying to manage those, manage the traits that exist in the wild fish for the long term. That's the difference in philosophy that we've had, and that's why we have these continual discussions. We have been successful in working through a number of those. The Umatilla program that was described here this evening, that I would very much agree is a success. We worked closely on that together. It's been done within the constraints of the wild fish policy where necessary. The wild fish policy there only applies to the steelhead program there. They were the only wild fish remaining at the time we began the program. And the Chinook program, the spring Chinook program, and then the subsequent coho program that's there have been a tremendous success. We have returned fish to that basin that we never would have been able to before utilizing the hatchery fish program. But they are not; those programs are not constrained within the wild fish policy because they were gone before we started the program over.
Okay, I guess the other question is, and I guess I'll just make an observation. I feel that you may be overstating the cooperative nature of the relationship between the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the tribes, as evidenced by the fact that they want an extension from your management proceeds. And I agree that there is a philosophical difference between the tribal approach to the policies and the department's approach to the policies. In the case of those differences, philosophical differences, whose policy rules, whose policy is preeminent? Is it the Department of Fish and Wildlife, or is it the Native American Treaty Tribes?
Sheriff Arioli. From a standpoint of, I'll call it negotiations, if you will, in terms of our discussions with the different programs that we're working within, we as an agency stick with our commission's policy on the wild fish policy that they have adopted.
So the wild fish policy is really set by the commission.
Fish and Wildlife Commission adopted that policy, and we work underneath those policies that they...
And the department implements the policy.
That's correct.
Okay. Have you seen the Dash 2 amendments to the bill?
I did.
The Dash 2 amendments require a cooperative and consistent wild fish policy between the tribes and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Would you care to comment on that?
Sheriff Arioli. The Dash 2 amendments, as written here, on the surface to me, look good. However, the concern I have, again, just like the difference in philosophy we may have, may be interpretation of what the words are that are used in the sentence. The idea of cooperative, what definition can we all agree on what cooperative is, and consistent, while that seems straightforward, I'm not sure that we would all agree, the tribes and ourselves, on what consistent means.
And while we're having a definition discussion, what's the definition of the word co-manager?
I will defer to Steve Sanders.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the term co-management is actually a relatively technical term, and I think it's probably fair to say that the tribes and the states probably disagree with respect to what that means. As a colloquial matter, to the extent that it means cooperative management, where the goals of the state and the tribes to rebuild natural spawning populations overlap. Certainly, we would agree, and we believe that we have been co-managing the fisheries with respect to that purpose. That is, we all believe that the purpose here is to restore naturally spawning runs. With respect to the technical legal basis of the extent of tribal sovereignty over the state's sovereign management of those fish and wildlife resources, though, we probably had a difference of opinion. Oregon, when it entered the state on February 14, 1859,
it's very late. I've been here since 5 o'clock. I'd like the layperson's short version of what co-management means.
I guess that's the question. It's not defined, certainly in 3609. To the extent that it should imply a tribal veto authority over state management of fish and wildlife off the reservation, I do not believe that is allowed by federal law.
Would it also mean concurrently that there was no veto power in the state over the sovereign rights of the tribes?
With respect to?
Their management authority on areas where they share by treaty rights in the management of the fisheries park?
Our authority within the Upper Columbia Basin is established by the Columbia River Fish Management Plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's effectively a veto over both of our management strategies in the sense that we all must comply with that federal court order.
Is the sovereignty of the state and the sovereignty of the tribes equal sovereignty?
No, in the sense that they have sovereignty over different aspects of fishery management. The tribes are entitled to a fair share up to 50% of the harvestable surplus of fish. They have a sovereign right to that because they reserve it to themselves in the treaties. The states have sovereign authority over the ways, methods of producing those fish and the management of those fish outside the allocation to the tribes. In USC Oregon, we have agreed as a cooperative matter to manage the fisheries and production matters with the tribe in a way that we think is designed to provide that fair share of the harvestable fish for them.
Okay, so there's that word cooperative again.
Yes.
What about consistency? Can you manage a wild fish population with the Department of Fish and Wildlife's philosophy and manage returning stocks simultaneously with a hatchery policy operated by the tribes and have a consistent outcome?
I'm not sure if I followed that. If you mean, can we be consistent with all of the tribes' wild fish policy or all the tribes in Oregon? I don't think so. For one reason, I'm not certain that all of the tribes in Oregon have a consistent wild fish policy among themselves. I suspect, for example, that the Burns Paiute tribe has no wild fish policy at all. And I'm frankly not certain what the tribe's other wild fish policy would be or how we could be consistent with all of them.
So it sounds like there's work to do by the department to make sure that there is a consistent wild fish policy implemented across the state of Oregon.
Senator Farrelly, that's correct. I think there is room. Have we met? I would say to you here tonight that the Department of Fish and Wildlife is still not managing all of its facilities consistent with the wild fish management policy. We have moved and are managing a lot of them, but we still have room to work there ourselves. I think the opportunity that is here when we do our review of the wild fish management policy is to sit down and look at a number of different options that can be consistent, if you will, with the tribes and with our thinking, but we have to do that in an open forum, and that's what we intend to do with the review that I described earlier.
Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee, if I might add, in large part, some of the places where we may not be in technical compliance with the wild fish policy is as a result of negotiations with the tribes in establishing the USC Oregon Columbia River Fish Management Plan. The Naha steelhead disputes illustrate this example. We've had, to my knowledge, two times when the tribes have filed suit, and in both cases, we've come to a resolution of that. We, for example, in the 1998 dispute, we settled that by allowing outplanting of a large number of fry. We did it based on the agreement or the understanding, though, that we would have a monitoring and evaluation program that would allow us to determine whether this program actually works to restore wild fish. The wild fish policy actually contemplates that we're going to have a monitoring and evaluation program that will recognize a fair amount of flexibility. That's authorized our negotiation direction from the commission, specifically directs us to focus on, look at supplementation efforts, assuming that we can get a monitoring and evaluation program that tells us if it worked. That's what we've been negotiating. The directions that we're moving now in the renegotiation focus on it.
Thank you. Gentlemen, do you have any questions for this panel?
Probably do.
What I'm hoping to do is allow a couple of folks, a couple of quick panels on opposition to this bill and move to work session.
Ask you and then you summarize what I think I hear you saying. You will work with the tribes on a case-by-case basis to co-manage hatchery fish in some areas, but maybe not other areas?
Sherfield and Representative Leonard. In USC Oregon now, we have Technical Advisory Committee, a Policy Advisory Production Advisory Committee, and a Policy Committee, and a Dispute Resolution System. So, yes, we work with the tribes implementing the fish management plan, changes to the fish management plan. There's a system set up by which the tribal technical staff and the state staff work together. They've come up with a lot of innovative programs, and so it's not as if you don't have contact with the tribes. Certainly, we've had differences of opinion with respect to how those programs ought to be implemented, how you interpret the data that we get back to see.
If I could be more specific, I'm specifically asking if this bill does not pass, does that mean that they can't use hatchery stuff?
No.
No, it does not mean that, because...
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Leonard, we will continue to use hatchery stock in a number of locations. We heard tonight describe the Omaha program, which has a supplementation program on it on Little Sheep Creek, and then now subsequently on Big Sheep Creek. We have a supplementation program in the Umatilla for steelhead. We are working on supplementation programs in the Hood River. So there is supplementation programs occurring.
That's with the tribe.
That's correct. They are in cooperation.
So what they're explaining tonight are efforts that are being undertaken in cooperation with our F&W.
Correct.
Okay.
So the question, I would just to cover
Nelson.
I think that probably the tribes are not entirely agree that it's a cooperative effort. But I also... like they indicated, or at least my opinion is that the legislature sets policy. And if we choose to change that,
so moved.
Just want to be understood.
And I think what we need to do, gentlemen, is move on to some of the other testimony here. If you'd, I hate to make your evening longer, but if you'd remain in case there's some technical questions about the policy.
Mr. Chair?
Representative King?
At point of order, you know, this is not 8:30 in the morning. I think we're in real risk of losing a quorum here, so you want to vote the bill pretty quick.
I agree, sir, but I guess I would want the folks, the citizens that have shown up here from different organizations to be able to voice their opposition, because I think they want to
hear earlier on the bill. I had several people in the room, and you rolled over me. The votes are already cast here, and... we know the issue. We should have been working more on this issue during this session and less on 3225. There's a whole bunch of fisheries issues that should have been in front of this committee during the whole session that are important to the state of Oregon. So I don't think we're going to change the vote at this point.
I will ask if there's anyone in the audience who would want to come up and offer a written testimony or needs to offer additional testimony due to the lateness of the hour and the fact that our committee is shutting down. I guess I'll poll the members of the committee and ask if they want to go to a work session on this bill. Okay. Senator Carmel.
Excuse me, sir? Colleagues, I'd like to call Oregon Craft.
Okay. Well, don't get rid of the oil all night.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and I won't take 5 minutes. I'll take probably 2 minutes. The basic questions here, and we are in opposition to this bill, the co-management issue should be settled in the court where they're discussing it now. That's not an issue that we believe should be in front of the legislature. The wild fish management policy issue is going to be discussed and debated and settled in the review of the rule that has been called on by the governor's executive order. So we believe that that should be in that forum, not here. There's a basic disagreement on the science between the tribes and the state and federal agencies. That's not going to be resolved here either. Maybe you want to ask some of those science questions of your independent science team. That's the way you hired them in the first place. Get them involved in this question. I've taken a look at the Dash 2 amendments. I'm not sure what they mean. They're unclear. They're, cooperative and consistent. I'm not sure what that means. And given the undefined terms, I think that those issues are best handled in the review of the Wild Fish Management Policy also. So I'll close there and be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Mahoney? There are two members from the Native Fish Society, and Mr. Jeff Sager, is he still available? Do you have anything to add to the testimony that was heard? Yes, Mr. Bakke? Mr. Bakke and Don Exenberg?
I have comments that I will be supplying you in written form. I'd like to go directly to comments regarding the amendment. let's see. Oregon will have to go to federal court, is our feeling, every time they have a scientific disagreement with the tribes under this amendment. Does the Oregon legislature and this committee wish to burden the state of Oregon and constrain its management authority by having to get federal court approval for each fish management action the tribes do not agree with? This bill would allow the tribes special authority over state fish management programs. In addition, this bill is aimed only in one direction, that is at the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon bears the full burden and expense of justifying its management program, while the tribes have no similar burden under the bill. We ask that this bill be set aside and allow the wild fish policy to be reviewed by the Department of Fish and Wildlife and all other parties, and also to under the Oregon plan, and for these differences to be worked out under U.S. v. Oregon processes, where you have a court-ordered negotiated agreement between the states, the federal agencies, and tribes for these disputes. They have a dispute resolution capability on where these disputes are to be handled. We oppose this legislation, and we would like you to allow the processes that are being proposed and are already ongoing to serve the purpose that this legislation seeks to correct.
Questions for Mr. Bakke? Again, the date of the completion for the wild fish policy review would be what? Have a timeline for the completion of the review?
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in their testimony said it would be completed in July of 2000.
Mr. Eichenberger, I'm probably going to answer that.
No, it's not Eichenberger, and thank you at this late hour. I have very little to add except a strong support of what has been said. I did have some thoughts, but at this time, I'm left with just one thing. Of having worked for 20, 25 years on fish issues, mostly on the trout issue, and thinking of the ramifications of this proposed legislation is rather frightening. We've worked hard on rivers like Matoluis, the Deschutes, the Crooked, the Fall River, to implement some sort of a wild fish policy. This kind of a departure, I think, would create a certain degree of chaos and confusion that none of us need. We're dealing with a process issue here, and I think it has to be dealt with aside from a legislative one. As a personal note, I grew up in Oregon with a promise of hatcheries, and those cost companies have failed their promise. That's all.
Questions for the panel? Corey, you have a group of folks from the American Fisheries Society, and you would like to have a summary of their testimony.
Can I talk about the one question?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Speaker and Mr. Chair, for the late evening, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Lefroy, representing the American Fisheries Society. It seems appropriate to me that we're taking on an issue that has to do with science that you hear from the scientists. And we represent the scientific fishery community in the state of Oregon, and the policy we have is one that has been around through our processes and represents, we think, the best viewpoint of fishery scientists in the state of Oregon. Dr. Hall, from retired professor from Oregon State, And Dr. Lee, who I said earlier, just been appointed to be on the team. And then the disciplinary science team, instead of Washington, will be here to ask you questions.
Mr. Chairman, committee, in the interest of time, I'm going to very much truncate my remarks. Basically, the science says that there is a difference between hatchery fish and wild fish. Hatchery fish survive less well than the wild fish, and crosses of hatchery fish and wild fish also survive less well. And sometimes, where this has been evaluated, the difference is substantial. That raises enough of a concern that we believe, the chapter believes, that there is a role for supplementation. It has been successful in certain instances, but it is important that it be evaluated, and that's one of the crucial issues in this. You know, I believe, in fact, that that's at the crux of the origin of some of this dispute, is how should this be evaluated? But the point is that it must be evaluated. There's several scientific panels have reiterated the need for care and a very thoughtful evaluation in the use of supplementation, because it does pose risks. And there are protocols. There's the Regional Assessment of Supplementation Project, or RASP. There's the Columbia River Fish Management Program. They all have these protocols in place. And it's the position of the Oregon chapter that this process ought to be followed to its completion. And I have some two recent reviews, 1999 reviews, that will provide some of the evidence about the differential survival and the differences between hatchery and wild fish, and I'll provide those to the committee along with testimony.
And we also have an annotated bibliography.
For the record?
Yes, for the record.
Dr. Lee, for the record, your name?
Yes. Oh, Hiram Lee.
Thank you.
I'm at Oregon State University. I also work with a number of the folks here. Donnie and I are friends, actually. I think that in some ways some further discussion helps certain areas, because I think we want the same thing. It's just to make sure that you follow through with all the scientific protocols to make sure that everything is going well, and that we do not have something that's being evaluated poorly. So actually, in certain instances, failure is not bad as long as we learn from it.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. A question, Mr. Kifori. Does anything in this bill preclude the continuation of the wild fish policy review?
Mr. Chair, the initial bill, or the bill that's...
I would be referring at this point to the -2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, we're not really sure what the -2 amendments mean, but I'm sure that there's nothing in that -2 that precludes the continuation of review that goes on now.
Further questions for the panel?
Hearing none.
Simply,
when you said in your report that the hatchery policy, one of the things that worries me is the hatchery fish many times implements the policies of how we function inside the hatchery. If we change our hatchery practices, does that change the outcome of your report?
It modifies it, but it does not change it.
There are still, no matter what you do in a hatchery, there's going to be domestication selection that's going to change the genetic composition of that stock. It may not change it as it won't change it as much as certainly as the past practices, but short of converting a hatchery to a natural stream, there's no way that you can avoid some change in the genetic stock.
Colleagues, if there's no further questions, we'll go into work session on two bills. Actually, better not do that. We just better do the one. We're in work session on House Bill 3609. The chair would entertain a motion to move the -2 amendments. Senator Tarnow moves the dash two amendments. Is there any discussion? Representative Cruz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as I read the dash two, they really do nothing. And
in that case,
I make the chair happy.
Yeah, Representative Cruz is out of yes.
No, the original bill, which I was proud to sign on to, is very point specific. And the dash two, I think, just talk about stuff that's already existing. I mean, supposedly everybody says they already cooperate, and so I'm not sure that we change the status quo with the dash two.
President Cruz, I understand that, and as a matter of fact, I'm regarding, and I hope the sponsors of the other sponsor of the bill is regarding the dash two, the friendly amendment. I am concerned that an outright exemption eliminates the discussion that I think needs to happen to coordinate the wild fish policy and therefore the hatchery program. So I'm hoping that we can require the Department of Fish and Wildlife to work with the Indian tribes in Oregon to implement cooperative and consistent wild fish policies, and I clearly see that as not happening now. So whether or not the statute does anything, it certainly sends a clear message to the folks in the Department of Fish and Wildlife that the policy of the state of Oregon, rather than being a discussion about whose fish are better, is going to be to work cooperatively and consistently with the Native American tribes who also operate hatcheries in all the same watersheds. So that's my reasoning for that dash two. Any other discussion? Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, in another year, ODF&W may come to a conclusion of the study of the fish policy. My comfort level with them coming to the right conclusion is not very high, because they certainly don't seem to be heading in the right direction. In the meantime, we have a crisis in salmon numbers. We have some folks that are already doing the right thing and are probably light years ahead of what the state of Oregon's fish policy is, and the original bill would allow them to actually do something to increase salmon in their watersheds while all this other stuff is going on. Therefore, I will be a no on the dash two.
Any further discussion?
Representative Cruz has persuaded me.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I can't support today. You're right. I did sign on to the original bill. I feel it's a good bill. I'd like to proceed with the original bill.
Further discussion?
I'd like to make
you feel good. Mr.
Co-Chair? I'm interested in the dash twos because I want this to work statewide. I realize it's not what the original bill was, but I think what we're trying to accomplish here needs to
have a discussion.
I acknowledge that we want the ODF&W to cooperate with them, but I think it's helpful to be on the record that cooperation has to go both ways. And, if they try and there isn't something on the other side, then we can only go so far.
Understand. Other discussion points? Seeing none, we'll call for the question.
That's not the vote on the dash two.
Voting on the dash two amendments is moved by Senator Tarnow.
No.
Aye.
No.
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 Aye.
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 Aye. Motion fails. Representative,
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3609 to the floor to pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 3609 to the floor with the D-Pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative King.
I just wanted to let people know that I'm going to be voting no on the motion. I would support the bill in the form of on the treaty lands and on the ceded lands, but since the geography does include all the rivers above the Bonneville, on that basis, I'm a no. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Question, Representative Thompson.
I'd like to comment.
Yes.
I'm going to vote for this bill, even though
And a lot of it is because of the history of my commercial fishing background and the problems that the wild fish policy has brought on the fishermen in this state. And what I hope is that the bill goes and passes out of here. I think it will get vetoed up top unless there's a lot of hard work by everyone involved. And so one of the reasons that I'm voting for it is I want to see this get a chance to go through the process and see if we can't come to a reasonable solution on this issue. And so I'll vote yes, and part of it's because of the history that I've been involved with in the last 40 years in fishing.
Other discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the question.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Thompson?
Yes.
Senator
Duke?
Okay.
Aye.
Shields?
No. Cassano? Aye. Senator? Aye. Motion passes. We will have Atkinson carry in the House. And Nelson in the Senate. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, we have another bill before us that if we do not consider tonight, we will simply have to consider on Thursday. It is a matter well familiar to every member of the committee.
Oops. Actually, it came from Water and Environment. It didn't come from here.
If you don't mind, gentlemen and ladies, there'll be a very brief presentation. We're in open session on House Joint Memorial 13. Mr. Jeff Fryer. Mr. Fryer present. We have a letter from Mr. Irv Fletcher in support from the FLCIO. Let that be entered into the record. Colleagues, you have a copy being distributed. Any discussion on House Joint Memorial 13, the dam breaching on Joint Memorial?
Mr. Chair.
President Cruz?
It was one of the funnest bills I've carried this session.
Representative Morgan.
Well, Mr. Chair, we did our part on the House side. I think it's pretty clear what has to happen with this next.
Representative Nelson, you're out of order. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Hearing none, we are in work session on House Joint Memorial 13. Senator Nelson, you are recognized.
Okay, I move House Joint Memorial 13 to the floor of the Senate with a due process recommendation.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. No.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion passed. Senator Nelson will carry on the Senate side. Representative Starr will carry.
Oops. It's already passed.
It's already passed now. Thank you. We are assigning carriers to the following bills. Senate Bill 133, Representative Starr. Representative Morgan will carry Senate Bill 1161. Representative King will carry Senate Bill 1163. Representative Cruz will carry Senate Bill 1166. Senator Nelson will carry House Bill 3620 without objection. So ordered. The committee is adjourned.